Jaya Vishnu Pada Paramahansa Pribrajakacharya Stathartha Shri Srimadis Gavanga Shri A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Shri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavrind Ki Nama Acharya Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Sega Ho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopagopina Shyamakunda Radha Kunigiri Gopadhan Ki Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Shri Mayapur Dham Ki Ganga Mai Ki Jamuna Mai Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Tulasi Devi Ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi All glories to the Assembly of Devotees. All glories to the Assembly of Devotees. All glories to the Assembly of Devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Shri Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Sattvam Rajas Tama Iti Nirgunasya Gunas Praya Sthiti Sarga Nirodeshu Grihita Mayaya Vibho Sattvam Rajas Tama Iti Sattvam Rajastama Iti Nirgunasya Gunastraya Sthiti Sarga Nirodheshu Grihita Mayaya Vibho Sattvam Rajastama Iti Nirgunasya Gunastraya Sthiti Sarga Nirodheshu Grihita Mayaya Vibho Sattvam Rajastama Iti Nirgunasya Gunastraya Sthiti Sarga Nirodheshu Grihita Mayaya Vibho
Thank you.
rajastamaiti. Nirgunasya tarastrayaha. Sthiti sarga nirodheshu. Grihita mayaya vibho.
Sattvam, the mode of goodness. Raja, the mode of passion. Tamah, the mode of ignorance. Iti, all these. Nirgunasya, of the transcendence. Gunaha, Gunatraya, that are three qualities. Sthiti, maintenance. Saraga, creation. Nirodheshu, in destruction. Grihita, accepted. Mayaya, by the external energy. Vibhaha, of the Supreme. Translation. The Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities. Yet for the sake of the creation of the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, he accepts through his external energy the material modes of nature called goodness, passion, and ignorance. Purport. The Supreme Lord is the master of the external energy manifested by the three material modes, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. And as master of this energy, he is ever unaffected by the influence of such bewildering energy. The living entities, the jivas, however, are affected or susceptible to being influenced by such modes of material nature. That is the difference between the Lord and the living entities. The living entities are subjected by those qualities, although originally the living entities are qualitatively one with the Lord. In other words, the material modes of nature, being products of the energy of the Lord, are certainly connected with the Lord. But the connection is just like that between the master and the servants. The Supreme Lord is the controller of the material energy, whereas the living entities who are engaged in the material world are neither masters nor controllers. Rather, they become subordinate to or controlled by such energy. Factually, the Lord is eternally manifested by his internal potency or spiritual energy, just like the sun and its sun rays in the clear sky. But at times, he creates the material energy as the sun creates a cloud in the clear sky. As the sun is ever increasingly unaffected by a spot of cloud, so also the unlimited Lord is unaffected by the spot of material energy manifested at times in the unlimited span of the Lord's rays of Brahma Jyoti. So the Lord here is the origin of everything. And what's unique is He's not controlled by that. See, why this has to be explained to us, because this is a concept we don't have. Right? Means the Lord creates the energy. That means He is separate from it. It is Him, but at the same time, since it's coming from Him, He's not controlled by it. So even though He possesses it, He's not controlled by it. Well, energy is controlled. Energy then is coming from the Lord, is dependent upon the Lord. So therefore, it is controlled by the Lord. Though there may be the element of possession, still there is not independence. Right? That sounds confusing. Why? Because it has absolutely nothing to do with us. Right? The concept of owning something and not being controlled by it doesn't exist for us. Because that's the way we are. Right? The parents have the kids, but they're controlled by it. You have the house, you're controlled by it. You have your clothes, you're controlled by it. You think about it, everything that you possess, you are controlled by it. We're not separate from it. We can't have it and not be part, unless we connect ourselves to Krishna. Does it make sense? Even when we say, no, but what about the impersonalists? They are acting and they are different, but their position as impersonalist that I am Brahman is that I am able to be not affected by this material energy. So they're still dependent upon the material energy to establish their pumpkin. Establish their positions. I was going to say, just as a, you know, you can say that it's a pumpkin and not a car. But its pumpkinness is depending upon that it's not something else. You know what I'm saying? Or you have hot and cold. Hot is defined by it's not cold, or cold is defined by it's not hot. Does this make sense? So we can see is that as soon as you have one energy and another energy, that interdependence means they can't function without each other. So this is what's unique about Krishna. He's not like that. The energy comes from Him, it is Him, but at the same time He's not controlled by it. He agrees to be controlled by it for a relationship, but He's not controlled by it. That's the point. I mean, the ultimate point is being made is when all of His energies are there on the banks of the Jamuna, He can walk away. Right? So that's the point. He can't not walk away. That's the uniqueness of Him. That's what makes Him, Him. Right? Is that He can do that. We can't do that. We are dependent. So that's His point, is this contradiction. He's transcendental, but at the same time is He is the Supreme. So that means there's a connection. But He is never affected by them. That's unique. That's what makes the difference between Him and us. Right? We become conditioned. We must be connected to something. So we are connected to the energies that connect to the Lord. Right? And by that, then we find our place. But He's transcendental to that. That's His uniqueness. So the example is given like the master and the servant. The master controls the servant, but is not controlled by the servant. Right? So that's the specialty there. And another example is given of that of the sun and the sun rays. The sun, because of the heat, it evaporates the water, and that water then floating in the air, then when it cools, then it creates a cloud. So the sun's created the cloud. So in our vision, the sun is covered by the cloud, but actually to the sun, it's not. The cloud is so far away from the sun, it's insignificant. I mean, this whole planet is insignificant, let alone a little cloud. So that's how it works, is that it's insignificant. Also, it's very important to note that here he's used an insignificant spot of material energy, though we know that according to the Brahma Samhita, that the material energy is 1/4 of the whole cosmic creation. So one would think 1/4 is not a spot. But because the nature of this 1/4 is illusory, doesn't have any real substance, therefore is just a spot. It doesn't have any more substance than that. So it has to be seen in connection, less like you may have a huge pile of old waste papers, and people do come along and put them in sacks, carry them off, and sell them. So it does have a value. And there's this huge, we fill up this whole room with waste paper. But then someone has a jewel. Right? That jewel is very small compared to this whole room of waste paper. But its value is much greater. So if you're talking about volume, then you could say, yes, the paper is very great. But if you talk about worth, it is very small. So by numbers, it is very great, is 1/4. But by substance, then basically it's very small. The only thing of substance actually in the material energy is the living entity's engagement in the Lord's service and the material energy's engagement in Lord's service. Other than that, it has no substance. It doesn't have any meaning. So the Lord is eternally manifest with His internal potency, and that is the natural position of the living entity, is to be connected to that internal potency. Then, yes, like the Lord who is unaffected by the material energy, we will also be. But it doesn't mean that we are independent like Him. He is manifest with His internal potency, but at the same time is, by tattva, He is separate. So therefore, He's different. While us will be under the internal potency, but at the same time, we're still dependent upon it. But that's our natural, original position. Because there, we are happy. There, our actual nature manifests. Otherwise, it doesn't. It doesn't come out. Yeah. So now in this, His coming in means that He utilizes the modes of nature. But He Himself is not dealing with them. Right? The master of the house gets the house clean, but the servant doesn't. Master says, okay, clean the windows today. The servant cleans them. But the master is not affected by the cleaning of the window or the dirt on the window or the hard work. He's unaffected. It's His potency. The person is there cleaning the window because he is inspired because of the pay. He is cleaning the window because there is a window because the master provided it. He has facility to clean it because those are all bought with the energy or the money of the master. So in this way, then the master gets done what he wants, but he does it through the servant. Right? Does that make sense? So it's his energy, but still the energy itself operates to get the Lord's will done. So therefore, His potency is there in Brahma, in Shiva. And in this way, He deals with the material energy. But He Himself is unaffected by these modes. We see sometimes Shiva is affected by the mode of ignorance. He gets angry. Or Brahma is affected by the mode of passion. that Vishnu is not affected by the mode of material goodness. That's the difference. He takes it up because goodness is the most difficult, right? It's easy to get angry. It's easy to have desires, right? You have desire, you don't fulfill it, you get angry. Easy, right? But to maintain the mode of goodness, where you do things because it's supposed to be done without any need for you getting something out of it, right? Think about it. Everything we do is because we're going to get some result. Spiritual, material, something. But mode of goodness means it's being done because you're not trying to get a result for yourself. You're doing it, it will give a result, but that result is for someone else. And it's not that it's my someone else, yeah, it's my child, so therefore, yes, I'm doing it for the child, but it's your child. You're not doing it for someone else's child. Right? But here it's being done because it's for someone else. So mode of goodness means it's for someone else, is according to shastras, according to duties, but you still have that connection that it does still come back to me. The pure goodness, it does not come back to us. It's Krishna's. That makes the thing work. Right? Then it becomes transcendental. So that's the hardest. So Vishnu himself takes that. Also to maintain. We become very inspired to start a new work. Right? Like just think about it. Something new, something fresh. Very enthusiastic to take it up. That's the mode of passion. Right? Or we're doing it, it doesn't work out. Okay, what to do? That's also mode of passion. You take it up with enthusiasm, you drop it. The mode of goodness is, it's going well, it's not going well, I continue. I'm taking it up because I'm supposed to, not because it's necessarily that it's my inspiration. It may be I'm inspired to serve, but so this is the way that I can do it. This is nice, I'm comfortable with this, that's there. But the actual inspiration is Krishna's pleasure. Something different. Right? Or ignorance. I'm going to get out of it something of ego. I'm going to get some facility. I'm going to get some recognition. I'm not getting that. I get angry. I think those things are me. Right? Passion is, I do this, I get the recognition out of it. So the experience of the recognition, that's the mode of passion, the exchange there. But that I am that, that's the mode of ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? We're the great yogi. So everybody going, oh, you're a great yogi, that's the mode of passion. Enjoying that in ambience. But that I think, yes, I am the great yogi, that's ignorance. Right? Does that make some sense? So they're connected. One is the identity, right? The sambandha. One is the doing it, experiencing the environment in which your identity can be expressed. Right? It's different. Like that. So it's connected somewhat to goodness. Because if it's your duty, then the experience comes. Right? But if you think, I'm doing it, I am doing the yoga, that's the passion. I am a yogi, that's ignorance. The peace coming from the yoga, that's goodness. So Krishna can work and not be affected by it. He doesn't think I am material energy. Right? He's not thinking that I am all these elements combining together. He's not, the experience of the material energy is not important to him. Therefore, he's unaffected. He says he performs these duties mainly because he gets the opportunity to interact with his devotees. And he sets good example for the devotees and for those who could be devotees when they get enough pious sukriti together to become them. Right? You have enough bhakti sukriti, you become a devotee. Right? So, but the Sukriti comes because you don't think it's bhakti, you think it's Sukriti. Right? I'm pious, I go to festivals that are given in Shastra. Right? So I go to Shivaratri, I go to Durga Puja, I go to Janmastami, like that. So going to Shivaratri, pious. Right? Sukriti. Going to Durga Puja, Sukriti. Going to Janmastami, Bhakti Sukriti. Right? Enough of that piles up, then by the grace of the devotees, then it starts to outweigh the other Sukriti, and you start to think devotional service looks interesting. This seems to be nice. There's some difference with it. It's something better. Right? So because of that, then we come in contact. That's the only reason Sukriti is of any importance at all. It's because by performing it, one may take up the devotional activities. Because generally a pious person, Krishna says in the Gita, four kinds of pious people surrender. He doesn't say four kinds of pious people surrender and four kinds of impious people surrender. No, there's four kinds of pious that surrender, four kinds of impious that don't. Therefore, the piety is important in that it creates a nice environment that is much easier to remember Krishna. You can also forget him. That's also not difficult. But it's also easy. Just let's say if you're in a good mood, right? You're happy. And then someone says, oh, hey, let's go to the temple for darshan. You're in a good mood? Yeah, why not? Let us say you're in a bad mood. You don't want to see anyone. You don't want to talk to anyone. Someone says, hey, let's go to the temple for darshan. There is a possibility you'll say no. Does that make sense? So that's why the pious platform is the platform of just general activities. You connect those to the Lord, that is then perfection. You can just perform the devotional activities to the Lord without having to depend on its piety. That's even better yet. Does this make some sense? Yeah. So, the Lord is able to do all of that without being influenced, because for Him it's just interaction with devotees. It's only the internal potency that He's dealing with. The external potency knows what he wants done and gets it done. But he only is interacting with the internal potency, with the devotees. The demons, then, you know, that's another thing. The modes of nature take care of them. Okay, any questions on this? Comments? Yes, sir. Or is there a separation between the devotional piety and the devotion itself? Are they two different things?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Technically, whenever you see the Bhagavatam talk about how pious activities were performed, that one is born in Vrindavan, or how much pious activities that one of the sons of Krishna has done that he is sitting on his lap, or the piety of the damsels of Braja, or like this, that's meaning devotional. So devotional piety means devotional service. It's called, sometimes we separate it, or means it can be separated or not. Because here we're talking about, because piety means, if we just say how fortunate they are, that fortune may come from any sphere. The devotees are so fortunate. So, which is true, but it could come from anywhere. It could come from their endeavor, it could come from the Lord's mercy. You know, it's not clear, but if you say their piety, that means they've made an endeavor. So it brings out the quality of activity, which is what's important to the Lord, because it's through activity that relationship is tasted. Right? Activity is bringing the two opposites things, elements, and situations and experience together at the same place. Right? So they're two separate things. But the activity brings them together. Does that make sense? So that's what's important, because otherwise they are fortunate. That's a situation. But they're fortunate because of endeavor. So therefore then devotional service could be called piety. But here we mean devotional piety, meaning devotional service. So the difference between devotional piety, meaning like this, this devotional service, and agyata sukriti, your unknown pious activities, is that point of you don't know. It's devotion, you don't know. You just happen to be walking across the street to your favorite delicatessen, and the devotees happen to be going by in their bed sheets, jumping up and down, and they're dragging this big, huge chariot through the street with this funny black guy with these big eyes. You don't know what it is, but it looks interesting, but I'll check it out after I, you know, buy my sandwich. You know? Does that make some sense? Is that he doesn't know, but he's seen the Lord, he's seen the devotees, and he hasn't looked at it unfavorably. In fact, he's interested to go and check it out. But, you know, first things first. You know, it's much easier to check it out when you're, you know, have your sandwich in your hand than, you know, waiting there, and if you don't go now, you can't get across the street, and then you'll be stuck until all these people go by before you can get across the street. So all these considerations are there, but it is still bhakti sukriti. So then when that comes enough, you start to appreciate more and more. There was a thing, you know, it's interesting. It's intriguing. It's something to look into. So if you increase that, then it becomes attraction. And from attraction becomes attachment. Right? And from attachment becomes endeavor. So then with time, you will take it up. It's just a matter of amount that we start to take note of it. It has some meaning for us. But otherwise, it's one thing that came by. I might tell their friends, yeah, I saw, you know, what was those guys? Those guys in the bed sheets? Oh yeah, the Hare Krishnas, yeah. They're out there jumping around, they're taking this thing, and you know, it looked interesting, it was kind of funny. So, it'll come to mind, but then we may forget. Does that make sense? So, because we have to remember, 11th canto defines what is meant by piety. Piety means it's connected to Krishna. And if it's not connected to Krishna, it's impious. So, therefore, they don't mean that he has given so much in charity, and he's opened so many hospitals, and he's fed so many people, and he's performed his duties nicely, therefore he's born in Vrindavan, or he's become the son of Krishna. That has nothing to do with it. You could say, because of that, he's become Indra, or he's become Prajapati, or he's become Brahma. That you could say. But it has nothing to do with the bhakti. So when they sang this in connection with something, you know that that means they've done so much devotional service. That because of their devotion, their vast devotional service, therefore they've taken birth in Vrindavan or taken birth in Krishna's pastimes in some way that's seemingly not very significant. But it's something very special because of that. Is that okay? So, because the concept of piety simply means activity connected to the Lord's pleasure. That's actual meaning of piety. Now, indirectly, as we see in the previous verses, it says that Krishna, he has created the Shastra, and by the Shastra you're supposed to know Krishna. So, when you perform the activities of Shastra to know Krishna, or to please Krishna, then that is devotional piety. If you don't know Krishna is involved, you simply follow Shastra because you're smart enough to understand it gives a better result than to not follow it, then it's still pious because you're pursuing the Lord's satisfaction through pleasing Him by following His dictation given in the Shastra. But because it's not directed at Him, it only makes it as far as some of His energy. So it never actually gets to Him as a person. Right? But because it's His energy, therefore we get credit for it. Right? And if we go against His energy, then it is the opposite. Right? That's the principle. Right? Does that make sense? So like that. So that would be the difference. Is that okay? It means you're talking both seemingly spiritual and material pious activities, or you mean sweet and spiritual?
Well, I mean, they do
like they have the bodies, yeah. Okay. So, now question comes up is that, well, what about the impersonalists who perform what would be seeming as bhakti sukriti, but their motive, they have a motive other than to please Krishna. So it's not like the person who's neutral, but the Maya they want to become. So that is also, how you say, because it's connected to Krishna, there is some value. Just like we see Kamsa, he is always thinking of Krishna. He never not thought of Krishna. Hiranyakashipu is very absorbed in Krishna. So they are, but Rupa Goswami points it out, it's not favorable, therefore will not give prema. Right? They can appreciate, because generally those transcendentalists who are interested in the Brahman platform, they do have some appreciation for certain elements of Krishna's superiority. Right? His situation in goodness, or his great mystic position, or something. There is some neutrality, some appreciation. So because of that, then that is elevating. But if you can't get beyond neutrality, you can't actually come to prema. That's why it's defined, if you get very technical, then the acharyas don't define, even when we talk about five rasas, they don't count neutrality within bhakti. Right? Though it can be, but it's not necessarily. Right? Because the impersonalist can be there. So, there is an element within the spiritual realm in which Shankarshan deals with such persons. Right? But there are tridents that keep them from going any further than the realm of Sankarshan. And we see also those who are having that element, but they take into the personal personality of Shiva, then they can go to the Brahmajyoti and be with him there. But those who do the same thing but with Krishna, then they can go and there's some connection with Shankarshan, but they cannot actually enter into the internal, the pastimes that depend upon bhakti. Right? And technically speaking, here we're talking about impersonalists. Mayavadis know it that they never, never, never get out of the material world. There's no chance that a Mayavadi can ever situate themselves in the Brahman, out of the material world. They cannot do it. Because they are always, even though they say they're monists, they're ultimately always dualists. Because I'm God, you're God, everybody's God, but God cannot be God. So there's a duality. Right? Everything's God, but the deity's not God. Therefore, because of this, they can never actually leave the material world. Impersonalists can't, because it's all Brahman. So Krishna is also Brahman. So they have no problem. Seeing the deity, it's Brahman. You know, seeing the tree, it's Brahman. I'm Brahman. We're all Brahman. So there's no difficulty for them. They're neutral. But the Mayavadis actually make distinction. So they're not dualists in that there's dual. You could say they're dualityness, you know, like that. Is they follow that element that there's duality. They say it's all one, but they don't actually function like that. They can't because they're offensive. Impersonalists aren't offensive. They know Krishna's Brahman and they have no problem with it. They don't know that he has the Bhagavan form of the Brahman. But they know he's Brahman. But impersonalists will say he's not Brahman. It's a material manifestation. So everything can be Brahman except for Krishna's manifestation as a person. Does that make sense? So therefore they're offensive. They'll never actually get there. But it's an important element because there's not a whole lot of culture and direction within pure Buddhism, right? Whatever culture and that is there in Buddhism generally has been taken from the Vedic culture. Because if we think about it, all the great scholars within Buddhism and the great leaders were all Vedic scholars. So what else are they going to do? They know that, you know, the left hand, you know, cleans and the right hand eats. It's going to be very hard to get them to, it doesn't matter. Right? So Buddha himself would make these distinctions. So culturally, then they'd follow. Right? So they don't have a separate culture. But because they're not accepting the authority of the Vedas, then so much more that you could involve is not able to be involved. For people who are violent, then it tones them down from that anger being so, aggressive to other living entities that they internalize it. Right? And they take up Buddhism then. Buddhism means internalized anger. Right? That's why nowadays it's so popular, Buddhism, because it fits the New Age culture perfectly. Because it's based on anger. You know what I'm saying? So it works very nicely. You know, so then you have to bring them back to here. So they're not going to go from void to personal very quickly. And impersonal, they're not going to understand. So you cover Buddhism and you call it Mayavad. Because impersonal was always there. It's not something new. Mayavad's new, but impersonalism has always been there. We see that, I think Kasyapa, he was a monist. Like that. Interesting, he instructed his wife to worship the Supreme Lord. So that's my point, is that monists aren't inimical to the Lord. Mayavadis are. You know. Is that okay? Yes, then? Like that. So then, yes. Is it for knowledge? How do you serve in pure goodness? The essence, pure goodness, means there's no passion and ignorance there. So that means there's no false identity and there's no ulterior motive. That would mean. So generally, it's a dual cultivation in that we're cultivating the transcendental platform by chanting, serving the deity, preaching, hearing Bhagavatam, living in the Dham. We're doing all these activities. At the same time, we engage our conditioned nature as far as we understand it according to Scripture in the Lord's service. His performance of prescribed duties is the mode of goodness. Right? If they're simply done purely for material gain or because of ego, then the activities in goodness, but the result that we're experience that we're looking for is in passion or ignorance. But the activity, the situation itself is goodness. You know, let's say that one person is doing the service because they want to be recognized, but it's still devotional service. But its quality will be reduced because of their impure, because of the mode of passion. And someone else is doing it because of, the recognition they'll get. Someone else is doing it for the facility they'll get. So it's still devotional service. So in the same way is that form of it, because the devotional service is just focused on the Lord, we have desires outside of that. So we take up those activities given to us by the Shastra that are appropriate, that we choose that fit our nature. Then following that, we connect it to Krishna. In the beginning, we may be doing it because of the benefits or the position that we attain by it. But ultimately, then we try to do it because it pleases Krishna. So that's the progression, like that. That's why Krishna is always mentioning the point of performing your prescribed duties in knowledge with detachment. Right? Knowledge means that will cut the ignorance, and detachment that will cut the passion. Then, but he doesn't leave it there. He says, "Do it for me," right? Remembering me. So then that takes it through to bhakti. Okay? Is that okay? Is that, yes. Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Question would be, is we're performing our activities through Vaidhi Bhakti, and Vaidhi Bhakti is specifically connected to Vaikuntha. But because we're devotees of Krishna in Braja, which is that of spontaneous devotional service, how do we in our position of sadhakas increase the element of spontaneity in our service? So that we go to Vrindavan and not Vaikuntha. Would that be? Yeah. Okay? So, here is that we always have to remember is that service or activity must have a form. Right? There has to be something through which you express that affection. So, now, the difference between spontaneous and regulated is that it's a mood. It has actually nothing to do with the form. That's important to note, because otherwise we'll tend to, in our simplicity, throw out the form of bhakti in the name of spontaneity. Right? Because spontaneity does not mean sporadic. Spontaneity means it has a particular quality of enthusiasm about it, a particular kind of attachment. Right? The child is attached to the father. The wife is attached to the husband. The mother is attached to the son. They happen to be the same person. It's all attachment. But the nature of it, the flavor of it, is different between the three. Does that make sense? So, one could say, oh, the attachment of the mother is different from the attachment of the daughter. But it's expressed in the same way. The mother wants to know how the son is doing. The daughter wants to know how the father is doing. The wife wants to know how the husband is doing. Right? The father, then the mother is feeding the son, the wife is feeding the husband, the daughter is helping feeding the father. Right? The mother smiles at the son, the wife smiles at the husband, the daughter smiles at the father. Right? So actually it's simply mood. Very, very important. Because if not, this is what makes for really great sahajiyas. Is that what you're saying? Sahajiya can't tell the difference. They think it's the form. Oh, if I read about Dwarka pastimes, then I'll go to Vaikuntha, and only if I read about Braja pastimes, and in Braja pastimes, only Braja with the gopis, and in Braja with the gopis, only Krishna with Radharani, and Krishna with Radharani, only when she... But somehow or another, those self-same gopis don't seem to think like that. Right? Lalita, who's impressed by Krishna's qualities, on the walls of her kunja has pictures of Krishna killing the demons. Right? So it's there. And they have fun goofing on Jatila. Right? Jatila comes to Radhakund and they have two really good options. One kunj, everything is made out of all the jewels that are black, like sapphires and all that. And another kunj is everything is gold. So all the gopis go into with Krishna into the kunj. Jatila comes. She only sees Krishna sitting there. He's sitting there in the kunj. She can't see that he's holding on to Radharani and she's holding on to him and all the gopis are cracking up laughing. And Jatila's looking around and going, no gopis. It's just Krishna. I made a mistake. Or the other opposite in the other one. They're there, Krishna's there, everything. They come in and all they do is see gopis. No Krishna. That's goofing on Jatila. They're not just sitting around, you know, panting. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem, is we don't actually know what rasa is. Rasa is based on activity. And activity has to have a form. In the spiritual world, it's the spontaneous form. In Vaikuntha, it's the shastric form. Mother Jashoda, when she sees Krishna, she spontaneously wants to feed him. In Vaikuntha, they feed Krishna 7 times a day. You understand? So the form of it's actually the same, but the approach is different. One feels comfortable with the form of Vaidhi. The other one is just simply the expression of the love. Is that what you said? Now we'll get to answer your question. Okay? Yes. Yeah. So the point is the regular principles are not given up in the name of spontaneity. Spontaneity, Prabhupada defines like this. And we always have to remember who Prabhupada is. He comes from there. So, he says, he gives, this is the example of spontaneous devotional service, because this shows the mood of it, not the form of it. You go to Mangalarti because you're supposed to, because the Shastra says that the Brahma Muhurta is the best time of the day, and therefore then according to Pancharatra, then we see the Lord at that time because that's what you should do. And by seeing the Lord at Mangalarti, millions of lifetimes of sinful things are, you know, burnt away. And in this way, you know, one's life becomes auspicious. Right? Yes? That's Vaidhi Bhakti. Spontaneous devotional service means I like to go to Mangalarti because I like Mangalarti. I like seeing the deities. I like being with the devotees there. That's spontaneous devotional service. Some will disclaim that this is not. But I will say boldly, that is people who do not know what they're talking about. And no one would be able to prove that otherwise, because this would be going against what Prabhupada said. Because we have to understand, spontaneous does not just mean gopis. Spontaneous is a general concept that I do the activity connected to Krishna because I like Krishna. Right? The Brajabasis serve Krishna just because they like him. Right? Why do you have a friend? You just like them. And you are attracted to them in that mood of a friend. It's no more than that. Right? I mean, if you think about it, in social circles, the final argument you can make is, I like it. How come you do that? Well, it's good for you. Well, I think differently, you know, this and that. You know, why don't, you know, I go on like that forever. You know, why don't you, how come you don't eat eggplant? Well, you know, according to Ayurveda, you know, this, that, it's not so good. Things the semen, so many things. Ah, well, that, you know, Ayurveda, these guys, you know, I probably said Ayurveda has been lost and all that. And very, you know, allopath is very developed. They're very advanced in this, that. And why do you, which doctor told you that? Yeah, this is that. If I just say, I hate eggplant, therefore I don't eat it. Oh, okay, no problem, no problem. Hey, you know, great, leave it on the side, you know. Don't cook that. He hates eggplant. But if it's a matter of Shasta, guaranteed every time I go to that house, there'll be eggplant in every preparation. Why? Because they're trying to make their point. Right? I've been living with this for 20 years. So. Like that, yeah. You understand? So, but you just say, I hate eggplant. Oh, okay. So if you think about it, then the ultimate point is they just love Krishna, that's all. He can be God, he cannot be God. Who cares? But it's time for his bath. You know, like that. You know, you can be God, but you know, time to come in, you got to eat, or you're gonna, you know, you're gonna starve to death. You think you're a street kid or something? That's all. It's just that. That's the point. Then that spontaneity will have its particular forms of conjugal, parental, friendship, servant, like this. But his general thing is, you do it just because you like it. And it's an actual felt feeling. You know it's felt because you can't not go to Mangalarti. Right? You're missing something right now. You don't feel bad, oh, if I don't go to Mangalarti, then, you know, maybe something will happen to the family, or, you know, something bad happened, or something happened bad today, oh, maybe because I didn't go to Mangalarti, or like that. That's there. Maybe. But what we're saying is, you don't go to Mangalarti because you just miss seeing the deities. I wanted to see what they were wearing today, or I'd just like to see them, or I'd just like to hear the kirtana. That's spontaneous devotional service. Prabhupada explains that in Nectar Devotion. Yes. Means, so yeah, so the question is spontaneity could be practiced the way we're practicing it. Actually, if you want to know a real secret, Prabhupada only gave us spontaneous devotional service in the form of Vaidhi Bhakti. And unfortunately, others in this line and other lines don't have the depth to understand this. They just don't. Prabhupada gave to us just Madhyamadikari. He didn't give to us Kanistadikari. Right? Kanistadikari means you do it because you want to do it for yourself, and you give something to Krishna. That's a neophyte. Madhyam is, you just do it because this is what, you know, Prabhupada and Krishna want, what Lord Chaitanya wants. So, the newest person walking off the street, yes, by definition, you can say they're a Kanista. They have all the symptoms of a neophyte. But their mentality's not. Their conditioned nature may very much act like it, but their spiritual determination is not. It's that of a Madhyam. From the first time they walk in off the street, they're like that. So, what Prabhupada's given is extremely special. But because it's so easily available, and that it would be just like, we know jewels are valuable. So if we suddenly walked out and there was this big, a truck drove by and, you know, poured out this big, huge pile of diamonds or something, we would think, wow, and we start stuffing our pockets with them and take them and do something with them. But now what about someone who's grown up in it? Their whole house is just piles of diamonds, and they don't care, you know. They just leave them, they play marbles with them. You know what I'm saying? So that's easily the mistake we can fall into, is because Prabhupada's made things so available, we can forget. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right, an eternal associate of Krishna, spent 7 years trying to find one copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. One copy. 7 years. A Nitya Siddha. Right? How easy is it? We have them lying around our house, you know, falling apart. You know, we got, you know, they made this volume and now they got the new volume, and so those ones are put in the closet, and someone borrowed one of them and I wouldn't know where it is, and you know, and the kids spilled, you know, grape juice on the other one, and you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? It's just so easily available. But sometimes we take it that rare is special. The Prabhupada is so powerful, he's made rare available. That's what he's done. So when he says that's spontaneous, that is spontaneous devotional service. And people, to avoid being counted as foolish, should not oppose that. They should try to understand the depth of it. And then only when you have that mood does other elements of Braja Bhakti make any sense. You know what I'm saying? Because to tell you the truth, the Sri Vaishnavas of their 12 Alwars, which are like their previous Acharyas, 3 of them only wrote songs on Vrindavan pastimes. Right? One of them exclusively, and the only interest was to serve Krishna, but they're all Vaikunthavasis, every last one of them. But all they're doing is talking about Radha and Krishna and the gopis. And in Tirupati, the deity, when he sleeps at night, he sleeps in a room that has pictures of Radha and Krishna and the pastimes on the walls. So that's the point. Is those that say just by studying Radha and Krishna, that's Raganuga, they don't have any idea of what they're talking about. That may be a form of it, or an element of it, but that doesn't make spontaneous devotional service. Right? The kid gets in the car, he grabs the wheel, he moves it, he goes vroom, vroom. You know, in his mind, he's going all over the universe. Right? But is anything actually happening? No. So that's the point. That's the point. Spontaneous devotional service is just that. It's spontaneous. Means you're doing it because you like it. Bus, that's all. So what's the problem? Like that. So that's the thing. Like that. We don't make such distinction, because if Krishna is so wonderful and we understand he's Swayam Krishna, everything reminds us of him. The gopi is like this. Trees. Black trees. A tree. Bark on it, you know, it's funny shape, you know, like that. It's rough to the touch. Krishna's skin is so tough, you just touch it. With the freshest leaf, it leaves a bruise. Right? That touch. And the gopis are touching rough trees and thinking, this is Krishna. Right? But somehow or another, if you hear about Krishna in Dwarka, oh, that can't be Krishna. One can understand this unlimited difference between these two mentalities. For the actual spontaneous devotees, everything can connect you to Krishna. And for those who claim to be, that aren't, then only this is that, only that is that. So the acharyas, they give us direction, right? The same acharya that can tell you the finest, the same acharya that is burying books that they wrote because the pastimes are too intimate for the conditioned soul to be able to you know, survive, can take our philosophy and split it down to the finest point of the hair and defeat the biggest scholars in the world. That has to be remembered. Only the sahajas only know the pastimes and wouldn't know beans about the ontology and epistemology of our philosophy. Very important. That's why you see that Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talked so strongly against that. Prabhupada is always talking, what do you want to do for Krishna? It should come from the heart. He's just encouraging spontaneous devotional service. But if it's going to take the form that the sahajiyas give, we're not interested. Absolutely not interested. Why? Because the residents of the spiritual world aren't interested. So if they're not interested, why should we be? Does that make some sense? Okay. So then we'll end here. Enough ranting and raving for one Sunday. Jai Ho. Jai Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Being attached doesn't mean there's no result. Being attached means result's not yours.
Result not ours.
Yeah.
So,
here. Do you have time? We have time. Sit down. We'll discuss it. So in this verse and purport here, we see is that the subject here is that's given is the nirgunasya and the vipo, of the supreme and of the transcendence. So he is supreme. So we see Krishna Prabhupada opens this first sentence with that. The supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities. Right? So he's opening with this point. That's his point. Then, yet for the sake of creation of the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, he accepts through his external energy the material modes of nature called goodness, passion, ignorance. So, he is transcendental to this. That's the position. Then we see here, then we can see is that the point being made here, the thesis is, the Supreme Lord is the master of the external energy manifested by the three material modes, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. And as master of this energy, he is ever unaffected by the influence of such bewildering energy. So he's pointing out that he's master, but he's master in that he's not bewildered. He's not controlled by it. He's not affected by it, right? Because he could be master in that it does what it wants. But he's bringing out master, he's unaffected by it. So transcendence, right? Vibho, he's supreme, he's master, but supreme with nirgunasya, that he is unaffected, right? Like that. Then, here it then goes to the next point. Now explaining this, the living entity, now because we have to make a distinction. Okay, that's nice, but what's so special about that? The living entities, the jivas, however, are affected by or susceptible to being influenced by such modes of nature.
of material nature. That is the difference between the Lord and the living entities. Now we're making a difference, because up to this point, then yeah, God's Brahman, you're Brahman, I'm Brahman, we're all Brahman, and yeah, it's great. I'm also transcendental. I am unaffected. I am making the sun come up. I have so many things. Right? Because I'm God. But now he points out, no, there's a difference. The jivas and that aren't. So now this will raise the doubt. Right? This will bring up that point, where the doubt is. The living entities are subjected by those qualities, though originally the living entities are qualitative one with the Lord. In other words, the material modes of nature, being products of the energy of the Lord, are certainly connected with the Lord, but connection is just like that between the master and servants. Yeah, so here you could say, but how will it be connected? Doubt can also come as that, but how is it connected? If it's connected, he'll be affected. Right? That is also a doubt that may arise. So then it's explained that the Supreme Lord is the controller of the material energy, whereas the living entities who are entangled in the material world are neither masters nor controllers. Rather, they become subordinate or are controlled by such energy. Factually, the Lord is eternally manifest by his internal energy or spiritual energy, just like the sun and its sun rays in the clear sky. But at times he creates the material energy as the sun creates a cloud in the clear sky. So here's this example. Right? Master and servant, and the sun rays, and the cloud. So then this starts to then bring it together. Right? So then the point is that now we've established that he can deal with it, but is unaffected. Just as the sun is dealing, it's a direct effect of the sun that the direct effect of the energy of the sun that the water is evaporating, creating the cloud. Right? But at the same time, as it's unaffected by the cloud that is created, it can't be affected by it. So it's established his position. It's separate, but the jivas, they are, because they are like the master and the servant. Then, as the sun is ever increasingly unaffected by a spot of cloud, so also the unlimited Lord is unaffected by the spot of material energy. At times, manifests at times in the unlimited span of the Lord's rays of Brahma Jyoti. So here we have our conclusion, right? Is that this material energy manifests in the Brahma Jyoti, though it functions according to the Lord's directions, can never be affected. Does that make sense? Right? So that was delineation of the point through the Panchanga Nyaya here. Right? Does that make sense? So we look at it, every purport is done like this. Right? But here we see he infers to the doubt here. And in some of them he will say, some may say, and brings it up directly. But in any case, that these all the elements are made. Yes, you had something, Prahlad? See? They're engaging them, meaning? Okay. Here's the question is, if someone has mentioned that we're engaging, you know, various devotees and various kinds of service and all that. It's very nice. You're getting all kinds of nice sukriti. So what is our comment? It's felt by Shiklaji that this is a bit patronizing. But, it depends upon how you look at it. If we look at it from the view of the acharyas, then the whatever the position, good or bad, because everything's connected to Krishna, they can see the benefits of it. So if they're well-versed in Shastra, that they understand the 11th canto and understand the meaning of what is Sukriti, that it simply means activities that are done to please the Supreme Lord, then it's actually a, you know, very favorable comment. If it is meaning that they're being engaged in all these activities that would seemingly be not directly devotional service, they're connected more with Varnashram and Vedic culture and those kind of things, then it would be, unfortunately, a manifestation of their ignorance. Meaning that what is the method? I mean, they would have to give an alternative method, a viable alternative method for a conditioned, embodied conditioned soul to render activities that the Vedic culture wouldn't be in contact with. That would like be saying that the prisoner is going to do activities that have nothing to do with the jail. Though he has, wears the jail clothes, wears it, eats the jail food, he lives in the jail, he's dependent upon the jail, his whole sphere of activities is the jail. Like that. So it's either he is pushed around by the authorities of the jail, and in this way serves his time, or he cooperates with them and actually tries to understand what it is they want him to do, which is to reform, rather than to suffer. The bad person will think, they just want to make me suffer. No, the suffering is there so that you learn. They want you to reform. So if you understand I'm here to reform, then the suffering is a side issue. Right? Then you take it up. But still, it'll look the same. The difference is in the mood. So then, because if we really wanted to get down to it, other than chanting Hare Krishna, and when you're actually worshiping the deity, you know, then, or preaching, not everything else is taking bishat, everything else is actually engaging the mundane in the Lord's service. Like that. You go out, and, oh, I like to wear this kind of clothes, but what's your, you like, so what? Then where did the grihasthashram come from? Why these buildings? Why, you know, we can just, the acharyas sat here in Vrindavan, in Mayapur in Vrindavan, it looked no different than this. Sit under a tree, chant japa. Somebody brings you something to eat, you eat. You don't, you fast. That's the alternative. So if not, now it's just a matter of if we want to take the position that where Prabhupada points out that everything anyone's doing anyway is the Vedic culture, is Varnashram. It's just a matter of if they want to follow it scientifically or not. That's all. So following scientifically would mean intelligence and education. A not would simply mean sentiment or practicality. So if one doesn't have the interest, that's fine. There's no harm. Main thing is that one is connected to Krishna in some way or another. So therefore, if someone's not interested in following it scientifically, it doesn't matter. We're not worried about it. But in the inverse, then those who don't care about following it scientifically shouldn't then disturb those who have the interest or the ability to follow it scientifically. Right? Just like if somebody's decided, I don't like sweets, then they shouldn't make a campaign that no one should eat sweets. That would be wrong. You know, they can be humble and tolerant and think, I don't like sweets, so I don't eat them. They like sweets, so they eat them. But in any case, it's prasad, so what do I care? Like that. That would be a more honest platform. Someone may say, bring up, but then why do we so strongly push the Vedic aspect? One is that Prabhupada and the Acharyas and Krishna himself recommend it, so it can't be all bad. But more inspiring is that devotees turn away from the simple Hare Krishna, 22nd Avenue, you know, process of devotional service, and seriously take up modern concepts of economics and culture, sensuality, you know, these dharma, art, and kama. They're taking them up very seriously, but different from the Vedas, and sometimes even in opposition to. So we're pointing out is, okay, if married life is so important, great. Why not do it so it works? Why should we have the same divorce rate that the Karmis do? Shouldn't we be better than that? I mean, if marriage is important, shouldn't it last? You know? Like that. So, what are the elements that make it work? Karmis have figured out a few, but means since some, you know, let's say since men are from Mars, women are from Venus is written, have there been no more books written on the subject? Has no one come up with some new elements that that person has missed? Yes. Oh, that's interesting. He was a follower of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. So, then it must be that it had such significance because of some of the, what do you call it? Studying, hearing something from the Indian, what he would have gleaned from there. Otherwise, why would it have been so powerful? But the point is because it may not be, doesn't have the Vaishnava element to it, it wouldn't have the completeness. So, therefore, there may be something left out. But at the same time is, even if he follows it perfectly, one finds there are Shaivites who have great marriages. Smartas are known for having very nice family life. You know? Like that. It's interesting. But point is that if it's how it, the element is that the more scientific it's given, then the more you can relate it to a broader variety of situations. Because the limitation is the size of the book and the particular audience's understanding and, what do you call it? Attention span. So even though you could probably talk to the person who wrote the book, he could probably give you 100 more ways to apply what he's said than he's written in the book. That's because he understands the principles that he's working on. Well, the people that read the book will only apply what's written in the book. Therefore, someone else has to come along and write what wasn't written in that book. Does that make some sense? In this way, that's a weakness. Well, if it's more scientifically given the principles, then there's no problem with more books being written. But then they have, it's not that that one goes out and this comes in. Because in taking up the process of jnana, or speculation has the weakness of that the previous person may have worked in, let's say, 80% of the cases. Unfortunately, my situation happens to be in the 20% that it didn't. So I work it out and I find what works. So I say, my system's different than his. Actually, it's the same. I just somehow or another, by my own investigation, come up with a way to make the same principle he's talking about, but he didn't give my detail of application. I've gotten it to work. But I'm not smart enough to understand that it's actually the same point. So the Vedic literature is there to do just that. But at the same time, one could also say, but the Vedas seem contradictory and there's so many different paths and so much this and that. You could say yes. Basically, two answers could be the yes, therefore you need a teacher. Therefore our acharyas then give us directions how to apply it. Secondly, you could say yes, as far as philosophy goes and their method of worship, but as far as when it comes to the culture, even down to the Adivasis, it's the same. You know, as far as, you know, what are standards. And the Adivasis in India eat with their right hand. They don't eat with their left hand. Like that. It's just the way it is. You know, so there is a maintenance there. So, therefore, we're advocating that if you want to increase one's sophistication in the performance of one's day-to-day activities, we're simply mentioning that if you look at the Vedic given in the proper form as Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas have recommended, that you might find the results that you're actually looking for might come to you in a more consistent and fuller way than if you try the haphazard hit or miss method that others may have come up with something good and may not. You know? And also then you lack the teacher. Right? It means we have the teacher. We approach the Vedas. That same teacher, we can approach their same book and explain it to them. Right? While by following those books and not following our teachers, they may be at a loss to actually understand what the original author of the book was actually meaning. Does that make sense? So that is our position. And then if people want to see it as simply mundane piety, then we at least appreciate that they have enough knowledge to recognize that the activities are at least bona fide activities of the Vedic culture and they are good for you. You know, so we are happy for that recognition on that platform. But those who actually have the divine vision then can understand that actually that's what Bhagavad Gita is talking about. Right? Arjuna was talking about going to the forest and Krishna said, no, continue as a Kshatriya, do that in connection with him. And that meant fighting, that meant politics, that meant the whole gamut. Like that. So it's just a matter of time before it's kind of like what we've been given becomes appreciated. Like that. Is that okay? Is that like that? Oh, here, then. Yeah. We're conditioned to many things in our life. Unless I see a result. I won't act. Here, 1 second. So then, question is that we mentioned that we're dependent upon the activity, so we're controlled by it because we're working for the result. Then Krishna's recommending working without desire for result. So then the doubt comes up is, one, how we would get there, and two is, why would we act? Because we're only inspired if there is a result. So then, here the point is result's not the problem. It's attachment to the result that's the problem. Right? Attachment to thinking I am the cause of the result and to enjoying the result. These are the two problems. Right? So, though that means I am servant of Krishna, so that takes care of that identity. The activity is being done to please Krishna. Therefore, then the attachment to the result won't be there. That is by the mercy of Krishna's devotees that I have the ability to perform the activity. Then that takes away the thing that I am actually the controller. So that's what one can do. Does that make sense? So in other words, one continues the same activities one's doing it now, but one sees that the results, the fruit of the activity that you're going to perform, is in some way or another going to be connected to the Lord. Then that is acting without desire for fruit or result. So that's action, how you say, inaction and action. Right? Means you are acting, but actually its result is inaction, meaning it's not material. Well, those who don't perform any material pious activities, they only perform the path of jnana, then for them, there's action in inaction. Even though they're claiming to not do anything, their motives and everything else are actually material. So then they're bound. So Krishna gives that formula that you perform your prescribed duties with knowledge, so you're not in ignorance. So you know who the result is for. You know who's controlling it. You know how to get it done. You're doing that in knowledge with detachment because you don't want the result. You're doing it thinking of Krishna and to please Krishna. So that means all the whole sphere of yoga is covered. Right? Like that. You're performing the activity for Krishna. That's karma. You are doing it in knowledge with detachment. That's jnana. You're doing it remembering Krishna. That's jnana. And you're doing it to please Krishna. That's bhakti. So that's how you do everything and get the perfect result. Okay? How does the Uttamadikari see everyone as a devotee?
How does that happen?
Because they're seeing the soul. It's just like this. You see a particular living entity, and it's small, it's furry, has a long tail, it chases after mice, it climbs trees, it drinks milk. What do you call it? What is it? A cat. Okay. So, but do you know that cat? Right? So it could be a nice cat, it could be a bad cat. It could be a wild cat, it could be a domestic cat. But it's a cat. So you see the symptoms of catness. Right? So the soul by nature is Brahman. Servant of Krishna. So that's what you see. They may have their individual condition covering that happens to be that of a nice person or a Maya body or a child or an adult. That's separate. You know, this cat is black, this one's white, this one's a Siamese, this is a Burmese, this one's a calico, this one's a, you know, like that. But that's, you can tell, but it's still, it's catness you can understand no matter what, you know, shape or size or situation it's in. Right? Is that understood? So that's the point. It's okay? So here the question is that the Lord, we're saying he's not affected by his energy. But we see in the various pastimes that he's controlled by the affection of his devotees. You know, or he gives the example of Durvasa Muni when he came in and then he had Krishna. Krishna's his. And then he's making him stand up and sit down and do all kinds of things. And then they have to barter for him to get him back. So he's completely in the control of the devotees. So this is, but that's his free will. Because he is Atmarama and he chooses to come under like that. Because if you deal with energy, you must come under it. That's just how females work. You know? So that's it. So that's how it functions. Right? But he's free to do that or not do that. But the jiva cannot function without being under another energy. So it's either internal or external. That's all. Is that okay? On? Brahma's meditation. Okay, can you say it, say it very succinctly because we're running out of time. I mean, say exact point.
And the way he sees Vaikuntha is not by him
Okay. So the question is that Brahma meditates in the beginning of creation over 1,000 celestial years, which is 0.07 seconds to Lord Brahma, according to his time. Seem to have a budding mathematician here. And then the other point is, what was the other? That Brahma seems to have had a view of Vaikuntha without going through the stages of Sambandhavideya Prayojana. So how would that work? Because later on then he asked for the knowledge. So time is the element of perception. Because when you're dealing with Krishna, it's unlimited. 1 second is unlimited. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't that doesn't matter. Let us say you're conscious and there is some very intense situation arises. Let us say there's somebody in a situation and they're in a market and the market suddenly gets attacked by terrorists. So after the whole attack, that person could go on for hours describing what happened and coming back, and depending upon the intensity of it, probably 20 years later, 30 years later, 50 years later, they can still tell you with the same vividness the fullness of the situation. But if you actually look at it and get out your stopwatch, it was actually 3 seconds between when the first mortar went off and the machine gun fire, and before they were out of the way, and then just... You understand? So, in one human night, which we can understand is because they go to bed and then they get up and then they go back. So they're getting up at 3:30. They're going out around 10:30. And you have to have, you're dealing with feminine energy, you have to have preliminaries. And you have to have conclusion. Right? You don't just have rasa dance. You have to have things that build up to the rasa dance. You don't just finish the rasa dance. There has to be something after the rasa dance. Right? And not only that, in between we know is there was a whole thing of beginning it, Krishna disappearing, them going around, and then all those pastimes, and then and this is all happening within basically 5 hours of our time. Right? But when they actually got down to the rasa dance, when he came back, the experience was that of one night of Brahma. And a night of Brahma is 12 hours. Right? So that means it was, you know, what is it, 4,300,000,000 years experience, dancing, that happened within 5 hours. That already went into, you know, getting there, preliminaries, then starting the rasa dance, then Krishna leaving, then the pastimes of you know, with yoga maya, then Krishna coming back, and then all their questions, and then starting the rasa dance, and then, you know, ending the rasa dance and going to sleep. Right? So therefore, since Krishna says he is time, always be very, very careful about trying to calculate things by time. This was the mistake of Aristotle. Socrates talked about philosophy. The concept of there's a transcendence, there's an absolute, this is all illusory. We have to connect ourselves to that transcendence. Unfortunately, it was not popular amongst the sophists who are pragmatists. Right? So they, as in the modern thing, they didn't kill him. Right? It would cause too much political upheaval and they would lose all their positions and there'd be riots and like that. They encouraged him to kill himself. Right? Isn't it? Does that make sense? So you have a committee that encourages you to chastise yourself. And then they can see, we're squeaky clean. Hey, he drank the hemlock, it wasn't us. Right? He's in the prison, he's presented with a hemlock, and it's like, you better drink this or else. But it looks good in the newspaper. Right? Socrates drinks hemlock. You know. Plato then saw that there is a transcendence, but we can see it in what we hear and how to understand what's here. And by this, we get an understanding how to get to there. In other words, Socrates said, by looking at the shadow, you can get an idea of what is the transcendence. But the transcendence is something else. So Plato got more into observing the shadow. He had someone who was not, who was, I think he was a rejected disciple, who is considered the father of modern science. His name is Aristotle. So he took Plato's stuff and made it into math. That you had to observe it and all this. And then some time later, then you had, I think, Descartes. He came along and then made the proclamation that only if it can be calculated in mathematical form is it of value. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, math has such impressiveness in the society. But because math actually is time, and that's Krishna, therefore it functions how Krishna likes. So that's always the danger in trying to measure everything by time and space, because that's our weakness, is time and space. So that's because the time means the activity that gives the result that we enjoy, right? That's the attachment. And the space is the situation in which it's done. That's the fear, right? So we will tend towards these. So therefore, one party, everything's math and logic, and the other party, everything's sentiment. Or just do the activity, just be practical. Does that make sense? But the actual is you can consider it all. I am servant of Krishna, and the result is Krishna. So the activity.